that's good.
Don't bang the table.
No, how are you? I get the higher bit rate, you know.
Thank you.
Apron.
We've been pushed out of here because there's a double booking of rooms. It's only a temporary thing.
Well, it's nice here, isn't it?
This is quite nice here, quite right. Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed your lecture yesterday, but I had something else to do.
Yes, yeah,
how did it go?
It didn't go. I wasn't as. Full of Biro as I was in the first one.
Brio.
Biro. I'll never get these words.
I'm glad you're not missing any of this, Bob.
Brio. Oh, I don't like that one. I don't like the way it sounds. I wouldn't have used the word if I thought. It's a bit like.
You wouldn't have used the word if you knew how to pronounce
well,
it.
Well, I once made the big mistake of writing to someone. You know, you're talking like a nitwit, and I spelt it with a K. And he wrote back saying, "You don't spell nitwit with a K. It's an N-I-T."
He's wrong. You do.
No. I wrote back saying, "If I knew that, I wouldn't have used the word in the first place. It's no good." Likewise,
"If I knew that, N-E-W."
If I knew it was pronounced Brio instead of Biro, I wouldn't have said it.
You're not dyslexic, by any chance.
I've never thought I was dyslexic. Maybe I am.
What about joie de vivre?
What's joie de vivre? I don't know what it is.
It's German.
Yeah.
For Brio.
You know, Biro. I can tell you the German for Biro, Kugelschreiber. The German for Biro.
But it's spelled Biro, isn't it? The same as the Biro pen. Brio.
No.
Isn't it?
No.
The R and
the I are transposed.
It's an
enneagram. Oh, I got that wrong as well. Perhaps I am dyslexic too.
Dyslexic, well. Well, you know the title for the... You know what DNA stands for, don't you?
I was...
You know what DNA stands for?
No.
DNA?
Dioxyribonucleic acid.
National Dyslexic Association.
I once saw a television program on dyslexia saying it didn't exist. That people just ought to get their finger out and learn to read properly. That's what he said.
It's a right wing attitude.
Well, they've got business with it now. There's a huge number of kids in school I used to teach at and used to get themselves someone to write the thing saying they were dyslexic.
Mm.
And they used to get an extra 25% time for their examination. They didn't give the picture an extra time. I thought that's most times there.
Yeah. Come again.
Well, the number of dyslexic police officers is a big concern.
Those old enough to remember.
I suppose we ought to start and Bob's becoming impatient.
You were a CP, weren't you?
So I suppose I'm Bob doesn't need much of an introduction, but I better know to start the meeting. Bob's going to talk on 30 years of libertarianism.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David. When I first told David this title, I said it was 30 years a libertarian. However, I suppose it comes to the same thing, pretty much. Though you can have the more personal, you can have the more theoretical, you can have the more third personal, how stands libertarianism. I suppose I better give you a bit of everything. So I'll get the 30 years bit first. 30 years ago.
Day one. In the libertarian house.
A prepared mind. I can make use of accidents. And I stumbled into the door. I didn't stumble. It was lunchtime, but I'd... I went into the door of the Libertarian Alliance in Floral Street in Covent Garden. Covent Garden had just got rid of the garden bit, the market, not the flower market, but the vegetable market had gone, and it was about to become, and just becoming, very trendy, a somewhat upmarket, somewhere at last for tourists to go without having to move along. Or stare at the lions or something, which they had to do elsewhere. They can actually stop a bit. Anyway, so the rents could be expected to go up fairly quickly, but still, whilst they hadn't, or whilst the lease was being used up, there was the alternative bookshop. And I went in, and the shelves were full of this stuff. Mostly more than I could afford. I was working in the NHS, not only very much, travelling up to Stevenage on Saturdays. often go to a football match after, but something else. Anyway, so the first thing I bought, pretty much, I've tried to narrow it down. I think I bought some liberal pamphlet, half-hearted Gladstonian something or other. The Gladstone Club, it may have been, something by the Liberals, and it was okay. I got it because it was very cheap, about 50 pence, whatever. But within a week or two, I'd got Rothbard's For New Liberty, which I read, and I very much enjoyed. I think I met, I put the names in, David Steele, known to many, and Chris Tame were there. David Steele hadn't cleared off to America yet. Steve Berry was in Germany, I was informed.
Yes.
In a sort of sinister way.
Tell your lies.
Please?
Yeah, I've been. Yeah.
Steve Berry was in Germany. Anyway, they prepared mine, as for penicillin and other things. I wanted to knee off. It hit a fertile spot, because I hadn't come to it quite fresh. I'd come from being a sort of, as I said in another talk, a Tolstoyan sort of religious anarchist back in 1972-3, around there. And I'd wised up by reading Penguin books, Pelican books, and getting a real shallow analysis of everything. So I read Mike Galbraith and read Vance Packard and the rest of it. And I knew, well, we have to have a market perhaps, but it has to be a controlled market, a managed market. You have to stop exploitation, you have to stop degradation of the environment, you have to have fairness, you have to stop trade cycles, Keynesian counter-cyclical policy, that kind of thing. So I knew everything now. Luckily, I learned better. But that was where I was in the early 70s. But then I had, partly through Popper, I had come to Marx, and of course Marxian critiques and critics, not the same thing. And that again had moved me into having to study a bit of economics, more in depth this time, instead of just the puffins and the penguins and the peregrines, and such stuff. So I'd moved from being a Labour voter as a boy to a Tory voter when I was a ship's officer.
A Labour voter as a boy?
Well, not quite a boy. That would be illegal. In fact, I had to be 21, didn't I? But my family were traditionally, they cared for the likes of us, so vote Labour. But I think my father secretly turned to Thatcher later, but didn't tell anyone. It was a secret advice he had. Mum carried on. She liked Macmillan. He was a top, but cared for the lowers. But she still voted Labour. Anyway, that's the personal side. So I've been prepared by Popper, because I'd read Popper and through Brian McGee, the best introduction to Popper probably still, isn't it?
I would say yes.
Yeah. So through Popper to
Popper
to Marx, and also Hayek, though I couldn't get hold of it easily. So it went on a bit, and I then by that time moved to being a liberal. That was the Galbraithian sort of period. So I became a card-carrying member of the Liberal Party in Stevenage. Turned up to see them. I was so shy and shocked by what I saw that I didn't actually start a conversation. I cleared off again. The Conservative Party I couldn't actually find. They were so afeard of having being firebombed or something that they and the applications to have a place to gather kept being turned down by the council. I never quite found out where they were to join them by the time I'd moved a little further in that direction. So I was ready in 1979 to not be too shocked or stunned by Rothbard. What I liked about Rothbard was that he explained things very simply. He started on page one. He didn't tell you what he was going to tell you, just get on with it. He threw loads of arguments in. Now, David Steele said, you might not be impressed by the natural rights angle. And I'd read a lot of philosophy. That's how I got there, to Popper, and through Popper. I read a lot of philosophy, so I wasn't an Hume and the rest of it. So I wasn't a natural rights man anyway, except the rights were a very good thing to insist upon for consequentialist reasons. Now, Rothbard and others think you either have consequentialism or you have a rights-based approach. And my view has been that, I said before, that many of the anti-utilitarians are worried about the consequences of utilitarianism, which sounds like a kind of consequentialism, which it is. They'd get around that, and in a way quite right if I talk about other things. Still, there are rules and the consequences of rule violation, either because you've offended God, done intrinsic wrong, or whatever it might be. Incidentally, some of the more shallow American kind of commentators always lay into Bentham because he was relativist. It's relativism. Now, Bentham said, I'm going to tell you what good is. It's happiness. Is. Not. It is. That's what good is. It's happiness. And evil is unhappiness. And that's that. Now, the rest of it is just working out the social physics. Now, it might be right, it might be wrong, but it sure ain't relative, I don't think. That's as an aside. So I was very impressed by Rothbard. I mean, he would tell you, for example, about rent control. Good motives, maybe, or just low politics, certainly. But what are the consequences for people who need accommodation? Explained about shortages, then you might have rationing, all sorts of ways around it. And he explained what happened next. He explained the same with, say, farm price control. What's the consequence of that? And he'd work it through. He wouldn't. I actually didn't find elsewhere, though of course I hadn't read a lot of other libertarian authors, but actually explain how the economics behind the politics leads to this, this, and this, and that might lead to more politics, usually wrong-headed, in a desperate attempt to undo what the earlier intervention had done. So that was Rothbard. At a personal level, meeting Steele and I don't think by yet some other activists now present have come down from Warwick, so I didn't see them for a while. But I saw Steele and Chris Tame. Chris Tame was a great, how can I put it? He gave good telephone, and he was a very good, in a way, a scholar, I suppose, if he'd read all the books he'd listed.
I think he was like Mark Brady, wasn't he?
He was one,
he collected like, titles, but he didn't read them.
But he knew what they were, and whether they were good or not. He knew how to rank works, whether he read them or not.
Mark's got that ability as well.
Yeah, well it's no bad one for a librarian. Yeah. Librarians can't read all this.
When he said
shelves.
He'd read The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, he meant the cover. The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith.
Cover to the next book. Yes. Well, that could be it. But I was impressed by them in a way. So I wasn't bowled over by Rothbard. I liked it. I liked the audacity of it. And it rapidly moved me from being a very small state classical liberal, and I read my by this time I'd read Road to Serfdom, Constitution of Liberty, Good Society by Walter someone, American famous, wrote for a lot for the New Republic, Lippmann. Now his is very good. It's a kind of, though he may have actually got it off by, so it may not be that clever, but it's halfway to the economic calculation argument. He says what can a society that controls the economy do? We can't make everything everyone wants. So what can it has to decide upon something that everyone can be bullied into agreeing to, and that's preparing for war, or fighting war. Because that simplifies matters. You need uniforms, armaments, that's a bit, and then a little bits on the side to keep people sufficiently sweet. So that was a very fine book, but that was not long before I discovered Rothbard. And then, of course, through the Libertarian Alliance and the Alternative Bookshop, all the other titles. That finished. Slid the last distance to no minimal state. Be a libertarian. Unless, of course, the state is simply a legislature that gathers every 5 years, has a ceremonial parade, a dinner, decides that no taxes are required, no new laws are required, and clears off for another 5 years. Now, if that's a state, I'm a statist. Then I can put up with that. That strikes me.
Especially the dinner.
Especially the dinner. I had dinner. So, I was by that time a libertarian, but I hadn't read all the stuff. By this time, I could now start to acquire a lot of the American names, not so much the British, though even some of the older ones, like the Americans like Lysander Spooner. They've all got wonderful names. Wordsworth Donisthorpe, though only couldn't get hold of his stuff, I see, but the name has to be mentioned. Auburn Herbert Barrister, no less, inventor of the cine camera. Yeah. Yeah. Not the best one, but he was one of the first. Great man. Anyway, all these old names, Herbert Spencer, of course, good stuff. And I didn't come to these cold, partly for reasons of economy, and also because it's a kind of, I think it's a good, it's always a good attitude. This comes partly from the top, but it might be also congenial to my way of doing things, that if there are so many people doing the mainstream thing, they might be right. Might be right, but someone's going to look at the other stuff. So don't just buy the latest book. Go into a dusty old bookshop and buy something to Edwardian or buy this, buy that. They may have got hold of something. And it's cheap, and it's usually very well written. So we're at the, you know, the Home University Library, I think some Cambridge series, an Oxford series of this, little pocket books. Books, the Dent series, for the working man. And I liked all these books, partly because I used to go to the pubs after, so I had to have books that would fit in a pocket. It was a bit embarrassing once, I was in one bookshop trying to see if a book would fit in my pocket.
And officer!
I did it in a very ostentatious way, outside of the pocket, just trying to see if it would fit. Because otherwise it was hardly worth buying the thing. It had to go, it had to fit in the pocket. I hadn't got around a shoulder bag by then. So that was the kind of attitude I always had, partly through Puppet Again. The other side has to be given a chance. You have to know the best of the other side, or even earlier people who were thought to be superseded, because they were before Kane, so dismiss them. There's always been a thing that I've liked is to try the cheap stuff and the older stuff. I'm not averse to remainders. So it wasn't until I found the alternative bookshop that I actually got some of the newer stuff, the modern red meat. After this, of course, it was all Hayek and Mises and what have you, Nozick. And very enjoyable. These chaps turned up, David McDonough, Jan Lester and others. And we might as well stay on the personal side here. I'm mixing the theory as we go. They said, you've read all this stuff. You enjoy it. You should go as a mature student to Warwick, because they've been to Warwick. I said, I haven't got any A levels. I haven't got any O levels, for that matter. They said, oh, they'll take you. So I applied, and they said, come up and see us. And I went up, and I got off at Sainsbury's, because I saw this big red brick building, which is a quarter of an hour. I almost got off. It's a quarter of a mile before the correct place. The correct place is all white tiles. It's like an inside-out laboratory, in a way, but nicer. And so I got there, and they said, oh, take this test. Now, I've been told nothing about a test. I hadn't written joined up writing in years, really. So I sat down, but it was things about, you know, the logic of if it always rains when I take out my umbrella, if I always take my umbrella out when it rains, does it always rain when I take out my umbrella? That kind of thing. So I was primed for all this, so I dashed up to them. And they couldn't say anything. He says, oh, yeah, what have you then? So I went, thank you. So I just turned up in September then, yeah, October. So that was it. And, I was very pleased to find that most of the students hadn't either didn't want to be in the subject or hadn't read up about it. They wanted to do English, really, or law, or something, but there wasn't any room there, so they went into, they did it. And so I sort of shone, at least I had confidence. I read a lot, which helped. So I did well, and though since everyone else got a 2-1, I was obliged to be given a first, which I pretty much deserved, though I had to do a viva. I had to talk, get over the hump. Mm. We're finally giving it. Anyway, that was great fun. Did I learn much? Well, I read more, but I would have read more if I hadn't been there. I mean, I was aging and reading. And confidence, polish, possibly. Realisation that you're not a lone nut who thinks he knows it all, but he hasn't read anything much. So that was very useful. I should throw in some politics here. It's not just an autobiographical. What have I lived through here? Well, the 60s. Stop-go, as it's called. Or go-stop, I think it should be called. In other words, pro-business interest rates, low interest rates, followed by a run on the pound, followed by jamming on the brakes, sticking up the interest rates, cutting tax, and putting on taxes. And it was blamed on lazy managers, trade unions or something. It was all done entirely by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, but they like to blame it on British people who just couldn't hack it compared to the Germans, going down like an old ship and whatever it might be. So that was the 60s. Now we don't have it now, because of course we don't have a fixed exchange rate. In those days we did, therefore almost every night there would be How is the pound doing today? Are we paying our way? There would be a cartoon of a pound sign sat up in bed with a thermometer in his mouth. Oh, not very well. And this showed that the Britons just wouldn't, they were workshop about, the workshop just wouldn't do it. That's a nonsense, of course. With enough capital surrounding you, you work less, not more. You work more productively, but you don't work any harder. I'm sure many Britons are working quite hard. So that was the 60s and the, of course, the trade union trouble and what was the Labour attempt? In place of strife.
In place of strife, yes, Barbara.
Yes, they attempt a trade union reform. They were told not to by the trade unions, so they stopped. At which point we might as well move on to Mrs. Thatcher. I should say, though, going to the politics, that the it wasn't a yes vote on Europe. The yes vote on Europe was, do you agree to or approve of the renegotiated terms of admittance, which were hardly changed from the ones. But still, Harold Wilson said he'd got them changed to our advantage. So about 2-1 said yes. I voted yes. Dumb fool. I thought it was a free trade area. You know, open, we could all move about. How wonderful.
We already had